You'll be hard-pressed to find a single culture worldwide that does not have any ghost stories amongst its people. Even those of us who do not believe in the existence of spirits will find ourselves gathering around the fire to hear the gripping tales of those that passed. Over time, some stories even embed themselves in the culture they're amongst, becoming staples of that society. Whenever you visit a new country, city, or even town, you never have to stray very far before coming across a walking tour of sorts, discussing the dark histories of the area, sharing ghost stories as a local legend. In Great Britain, the ghosts of these tales tend to be from the 14th to 19th century, often floating through the walls of grand buildings, castles, or inns. Almost every pub with a semblance of history here has a ghost story that sits along with it. In the USA, these spirits tend to be fresher due to the young age of the country itself. And although not as common as in Britain, the stories are, once again, easy to find. Growing up in the Western Hemisphere of the globe, many of the ghost stories I grew up hearing were told with a sliver of familiarity to them, all connecting in some capacity. However, in this chapter, we will be venturing east, swooping down into the shadowy streets of a Japanese night, where we will learn of a tragic and ultimately horrifying tale. My name is Luke Mordew, and this urban legend is Teke Teke. Japanese traditional beliefs and literature often talk of an onryo, which in English translates as a vengeful spirit or wrathful spirit. It is a ghostly presence that is far more terrifying than the usual ghost, as an onryo is able to cause real harm in the world of the living, even going as far as killing its victims. On occasions, they are even described as being able to cause natural disasters to fix the wrongs they received whilst they were alive, such as famine, pestilence, storms, fires, or earthquakes. The origins of the onryo may be hard to determine, but belief in them can be traced as far back as the 8th century. This was born out of the idea that especially hate-filled souls could be fueled with so much emotion that they return from the dead to cause harm to those of the living. Long ago, there lived a man by the name of Prince Nagaya, who was an imperial prince of Japan back in the year of 729 AD. The story goes that he was charged with a crime he reportedly did not commit and received the death penalty. Due to this, he was forced to take his own life, as his wife, Princess Kibi, and his children were all murdered. It is believed that due to the unreasonable way in which he was forced to die, he bore a strong grudge against the living, even after his death, ensuring that he would return as an onryo, the first documented in history. In the year 737, several of the individuals responsible for the prince's family's death died during the Japanese smallpox epidemic, and this was widely understood to be the wrath of Prince Nagaya. Now, tales of onryo continue to be told. It has even gone as far as to become a staple of Japanese horror, with two of the most famous being Sadako and Keiko, the antagonists in what the Western world will know as The Ring and The Grudge. When we talk about the horrors of the onryo, it is these horrifying stories and others like it that we refer to. Although to some in the world, these beings are far more than folklore. In my telling of a dangerous encounter with this particular onryo, we will follow Tuma, who is trying to get home from work late at night after a long, troublesome day, completely unaware that his troubles had only just begun. The streets were quieter than they usually were on Tuma's journey home, although he had finished work far later than expected. He was overworked and stressed about his job, staying later and later each day this week to ensure that he could get the work done, feeling the pressure of his employer. He knew he'd be here again, heading back to work in the next 8 hours, but at least he could get home, rest, and freshen up first. The air had grown noticeably colder in the past few weeks, and the trees had morphed into their autumn colours. Beautiful hues of reds, oranges, and yellows sprouting from the tree's branches like Mother Nature's decorative pieces. He loosened his tie as he noticed the train station ahead of him, but within moments, his tired stroll was forced into a quick sprint as he spotted the train already arriving at the platform ahead. He clutched his bag and paced forward, desperately clambering around inside of his pocket for his ticket as he approached, trying not to slow down. Finally, he reached the barrier and stuck his ticket into the machine before darting through. He hoped to be able to flag somebody down, but it seemed that all the station staff had either left or were on break. He charged up the stairs as fast as he could, skipping over several at a time until he reached the top. But by the time he had finally arrived, the doors had already closed and the engine had picked up once again. He stood there, watching his disappointment glaring back at him in the reflection of the train as it continued out of the station, heading off into the darkness ahead. He sighed to himself, frustrated and disappointed that he didn't check the train's schedule so he could ensure that he was there on time. He perched himself on the bench behind him and rubbed his tired eyes, which were already struggling to stay open. He only had to wait another 20 minutes, and then he'll be on his way home. That's what he told himself, trying to calm the stress levels that had once again begun to rise. He pulled out his headphones as he studied the night sky, which was crisp and clear. The stars were glistening brightly above the tungsten lights of the city, the crescent moon glowing a soothing white. He placed his headphones in his ears and clicked on his music, allowing the gentle beat to help soothe him. Although it wasn't long before he heard the muffled sound of a sharp clink on the ground. He turned and looked up his platform to see if he could see anybody else on their way home, but nobody was on either side. This wasn't a surprise to him. It was late after all, and yet it still felt strange. He was used to seeing the platforms filled to the brim with people struggling to get inside, a swarm of busy workers commuting in and out of the city. He closed his eyes and leaned his head back, giving himself a moment to relax, succumbing to the tiredness that had been slowly taken over his body throughout the day. He daydreamed of a hot shower and reminisced over his bed as the music that played calmed his spirit. But then he heard it again. The clink. He lifted his head, studying the platform to his left, looking out into the darkness the tracks led to. It sounded as though it was coming from the platform itself. But there was nothing there. He took out a single headphone and listened, his eyes studying the area around him as he surveyed the scene. He waited a moment, listening carefully, but the sound never re-emerged. He kept his eyes focused on his surroundings as he calmed his thoughts once more, slowly placing the headphones back into his ear. But before he could relax, the clink echoed through the station again, this time from the right. He spun his head, facing the other side of the platform, now pulling both headphones from his ear so he could keep his senses alert. He listened carefully, breathing as gently as possible to ensure he did not obstruct the sound. It could have been a rodent chewing away at something metal, although it sounded too precise, clear, and far too loud to be something so small. The sharp tap emitted around him again, instantly followed by another, creating the consistent sound of tick. He jumped to his feet, leaving his bag on the bench as he studied the silence of the platform, his eyes darting around every corner to decipher what this was and where it was coming from. He wasn't entirely sure why he was so focused on it. It's not as if sounds are unheard of, even slightly further out of the city. It was the fact that it didn't seem to be coming from one particular place, as if it was bouncing around him, stalking his movements. He looked down onto the tracks, but found nothing out of the ordinary, Not that he would know what was considered abnormal, even if he could see it. He sighed, accepting that he was most likely overthinking the situation. Although, as he looked up, the sudden strange atmosphere of the night spiked when Tuma once again looked to the opposite platform. He was startled to see what looked to be a young woman in the shadowy corners of the far side. She was seemingly crouched down beside a bench, low to the ground, staring at him through the gaps in her long, dark hair. He watched her, nervous and confused by how long she had been watching him. He could have sworn she wasn't there moments before, but perhaps he just hadn't seen her. Was it her making the noise? Was she trying to get his attention? Why was she crouching down like that? Why was she staring at him with such intensity? He had many questions racing through his mind as he studied her back. He took a slight step forward whilst his whole body trembled. "Hello?" he called out. She did not respond. She did not react in any way, simply staring at him from the shadow. Tuma was unnerved, mainly due to the fact that he could not confidently state whether she was hiding from him due to fear she was feeling or due to the fear that she was trying to instill in him. He began stepping up the platform, slowly moving to align with her position. She did not move, but turned her head ever so slightly to ensure her eyes could remain fixated on him, like a feline watching its prey. Something was very wrong. Tuma could feel it in his bones. Perhaps the hope that he was simply tired and paranoid is what made him stick around to find out more. She was just a young woman after all. He stopped and studied her, trying to figure out why she was on the floor, resting in the shadow so low to the ground. He sighed to himself, deciding he finally needed to stop this nonsense. He opened his mouth to speak, asking what she was doing, but before he could say a word, she asked, "Do you need your legs?" Tuma hesitated momentarily, watching her curiously, confused and discomforted by the question. He knew he needed his legs, although the question was so strange and out of the blue that he still hadn't answered, unsure on what on earth she was even talking about. Instead, he hesitated further, taking a step back as his body began to stiffen and shake. As if by instinct, he looked up at the schedule that sat above, desperate for this to be over. The train was still 15 minutes away yet. He cursed to himself under his breath and turned back to the shadowy woman once again. But she had vanished. He stumbled back again, even more discomforted than before. At least then he could see where she was and that she was on the other side of the tracks. His eyes darted to every dark area of the station as he twisted his body around him. But she was gone. He shivered as he gave himself a pep talk in his mind, reminding himself of just how tired he was and how ridiculous the whole thing seemed to be. He took a deep breath and returned to the bench under the bright tungsten lights of the thin platform roof above. He grabbed his bag and held it tightly against his body, refusing to sit and let his guard down. But before he could even consider what to do next, he heard it again. He froze, horrified by what he could hear. The sounds were growing louder as the woman grew closer. He turned his head, studying the darkness at the end of the platform that led down onto the train tracks that stretched out into the night. Alongside the sharp taps was the woman again, although now she was dragging herself across the cold floor as she emerged from the shadow. Now, on his side of the tracks and heading straight towards him. As she reached out of the darkness of the night and into the dim light of the platform, he could see her pale hands gripping a long, firm handle that clicked against the ground as she moved. Tuma's heart sank as he discovered just what this was as the handle connected to the large, rusty blade of a scythe. She slammed the base of the scythe to the ground, causing the to echo out down the platform. Next, she slammed her sharp, blackened nails against the concrete, causing the to emerge. She would then drag her body across the ground, her faded eyes still staring into his through the blackness of her hair. Tuma didn't know what to do, stepping back with every inch she drew closer. He questioned whether he should run. She was terrifying in holding a large weapon, but she was still small. She was still on the ground and still just a young woman. Surely he could overpower her. This may have been true, although in his heart, he knew this was no ordinary woman. It was clear that this being in front of him was not even human, or at least not anymore. She pulled herself closer, her eyes full of rage and focus, fixated on his fearful face. She did not clamber or rush. She edged towards him, bit by bit, watching every move he made. It was only when she fully pulled herself into the light that Tuma finally saw why she had been so low to the ground this entire time. There was nothing from her waist down. No pelvis or legs, just a torso dragging itself across the floor with ill intent. He wanted to scream, but could not. With his body already spun and running before he could even register the action, his stomach had turned and his mind had been twisted as the realization finally sunk in that he was now one of the unfortunate few to come face to face with an Onryo. The moment his pace picked up, so did hers, as the sounds of Teke Teke charged at an overwhelming speed. This caused a sudden, horrified panic inside of him as he turned to check where she was. But by doing so, he tripped over his own feet, stumbling back and slamming against the platform floor, almost slipping off and onto the tracks. He flipped over, looking down the platform to see her clambering towards him, clicking and clacking as the sharp scythe grew alarmingly close. He knew that by the time he got to his feet, she would have him. So he instead span on the spot, pushing himself off of the platform and onto the tracks. He slammed against the metal beams below, causing him to let out a sudden groan, winded by the collision. He didn't have time to dwell on the pain. He knew this as he instantly pushed himself up, turning to see where she was. Little did he know that she was already there, her pale fingers gripping the edge of the platform as her milky white, rageful eyes studied his every move. And with the swing of her scythe, he was gone. The following day, the news would talk of a man tragically falling onto the tracks late at night, colliding with an oncoming train. It would be deemed a tragic accident, resulting from traveling whilst exhausted, a warning to us all. The police would state that they suspected no foul play, and that it was, in fact, nothing but a mistake on the victim's part. They would never disclose that the CCTV footage of that station had mysteriously stopped working moments before his death, nor would they share that moments before the footage cut off, staff at the station claimed to have witnessed a strange woman watching him from the darkness. Teke Teke is widely understood to be a vengeful spirit, appearing in numerous urban legends up and down Japan and now the world. She is almost always a young woman with long black hair. Two things are consistent throughout her story. The first is that she has no lower half, ensuring that she has to drag herself along the floor. And the second is that her movements always create the same tapping sounds, creating the onomatopoeia of teke teke. It is said that even though she has no legs and has to drag herself across the floor, she can move extremely fast, with some suggesting that she could move fast enough to catch up with a speeding car. The tales often grow a little vaguer here, as when she finally catches her victim, the resulting horrific events vary depending on who is telling the story. However, on the internet, the more famous incantation of her story is one in which she carries a sickle or a scythe, using it to slice her victims in half before stealing their legs away into the shadow. To become her next victim, all that may be required is for you to accidentally spot her or for you to catch her eye. Once this unfortunate event happens, there is usually nothing you can do to survive. Due to her speed and otherworldly abilities in our plane, there is nothing you can do but hope to pass quickly as she hunts you down and destroys you. Some say she is looking for her legs, trying to find a fit for her, like a horrifying glass slipper. Others say she is guided by nothing but pure rage, and Onryo furious at humanity, looking to hurt as many people as she possibly can as punishment for the wrongdoings that caused her death. The way in which she died and the cause of her rage vary from place to place. There is no clear-cut narrative to this legend, and its origins are all but lost. Some iterations suggest that in life, Teke Teke died by suicide due to the mistreatment she had received from those around her. In other variants, she was a victim of a tragic event that led to her death against her will. A commonly shared origin story of Teke Teke is set in the years just after World War II. On the island of Hokkaido, an office worker is said to have been brutally assaulted by military personnel. The story explains that whilst injured and dazed, she had been left on the railway tracks and was inevitably hit by a train. Although her tragic story does not end here, it is said that due to the severe cold of that Japanese night, her blood vessels had contracted, preventing her from bleeding out quickly, ensuring that she stayed alive torturously for as long as possible. During this time, she would be seen by an attendant of the nearby train station. But instead of trying to help her, he instead covered her with a plastic sheet, leaving her to slowly die in the darkness, writhing in agonizing pain. Another common variation of the legend changes her origins to that of a schoolgirl, one who is viciously bullied and eventually assaulted. After it all becomes too much for her, she is said to have jumped from the train station platform and onto the tracks just as the train arrived, causing her to be cut into two. Here, the legends align, as once again, she is left in indescribable pain as the cold prevents her from bleeding out, leaving her to try and find help from someone nearby. It is said that due to the horror of her appearance, the person stepped away from her, leaving her to die alone. Both legends end the same way, with her last moments filled with disgust at humanity and fury at the world, ensuring that her spirit would return as an Onryo to ensure her vengeance on the streets of Japan. There isn't much information on the legend of Teke Teke herself, with her story seemingly being quite cautionary in its existence, often warning of what could happen if we mistreat others, what pain we may cause, and just how powerfully it could come back to haunt us. With this, there is an element of deservedness that comes with the story of Teke Teke. Not only is she terrifying because of what she may do to us, but because what she does is also understandable. We can't help but accept that her rage is justified and that fury towards others in the world is shared by many. Aristotle argued that morality is learned and that we as humans are born as inherently amoral creatures, while Sigmund Freud considered infants more a moral blank slate. This notion is often seen in survivalist stories, even coming forward and shattering the apparent innocence of children in the book Lord of the Flies. Some, such as philosopher Thomas Hobbes, argue that society is necessary to keep us in line, as we are inherently brutal and vicious. Others, such as Jean-Jacques Rousseau, instead considered the greed and corruption that comes with society a problem. Both philosophical debates have merit, and there are aspects to either argument that are both verifiable and logical. However, modern psychological studies do show that there is a somewhat natural good in humanity.
All right, I think I hacked in.
We're on the air?
Shh, security's outside.
But how's my hair?
It's a radio station.
Psst, psst. You guys hear about the Beyond the Shadows podcast with Ryan and Scott?
You guys into paranormal?
What about true crime?
How about UFOs and cryptids?
We also have mad hauntings.
We got security.
No, we don't. We're not big enough to need it yet.
No, we got security.
Hey, what are you guys doing? Get out of here! Listen to the Beyond the Shadows podcast.
Beyond the Shadows!
To reach this conclusion, they gathered several babies less than 12 months old and made them watch a puppet show. In this show, different colored shapes acted in ways that were clearly understandable as morally right and wrong ways to be to one another. In one scenario, a red circle tried to climb a hill. During this, the blue square tried to push it back down, whilst the yellow triangle attempted to help it by instead pushing the red circle uphill. After the show, the babies were asked what shape they wanted to play with, and they all unanimously picked the helpful, selfless yellow triangle. This was one of several studies that helped scientists come to the same conclusion. Humans are inherently good deep down, and it is just that some are often corrupted by life experiences. Even though this has been studied numerous times, and although the outcomes have been consistently the same, there will still be many of us that deep down struggle to accept this. The living is consistently tarnished with the same brush used by those worst around us, whilst the dead often gets to rest behind a glamorized idea of how they and their lives were. In reality, pure goodness is as rare as pure evil. We are only human, made up of several layers and filled with nuance. It is this notion of how immoral we behave as human beings that allows the fear of our comeuppance to evolve into such urban legends, where Teke Teke can come to seek her well-deserved revenge. Dear listener, I really hope that you're enjoying the content I create as I delve into the mysteries of modern folklore. And I feel so lucky that I'm able to do so for such an enthusiastic and ever-growing audience. Your support means so much to me. And if you're enjoying this episode and find yourself wanting more, then you can help ensure this and show your appreciation by leaving a tip. I create this work for free, and my agenda was never to turn this into a career. Although, with that said, a lot of time, effort, and hard work goes into the creation of each chapter. And so, if you find yourself so inclined to do so, you can simply click on the link in our show notes. How big of a tip you leave, or if you leave a tip at all, is completely up to you. But know that every tip I receive is extremely appreciated and helps further along our work, ensuring that you can receive more content at a more frequent pace. If you want to do more than that, then you can also subscribe as a mythologist for £5 a month or a folklorist for £10 a month. Both will get you exclusives, private messages, and work-in-progress updates. Although if you sign up to be a folklorist, you will also receive early access, discount codes on merchandise, and behind-the-scenes updates. Whether you tip, subscribe, give a review on your podcast provider, or simply continue to listen to my work for free, I sincerely thank you for listening, and I hope that you continue to join us in our discoveries. And now, back to the legend. Although Teke Teke has become somewhat of a mini-celebrity amongst certain corners of the internet, it is often stated that she is not the first of her kind. With a legless on Rio out for revenge predating Teke Teke's arrival, this spirit is known as Kashima Reiko and is one that specifically haunts train station toilets up and down the country of Japan. If you were to be so unlucky as to be one that came across the vengeful spirit of Kashima Reiko, you would find that she would whisper a question, one that simply asks, "Where are my legs?" There is only one correct answer to this question, and the right answer is not a certainty that she will let you live. But if you were to ever encounter her, you would need to reply on the Meishin line. She is not known to be the only onryo to haunt public toilets, as there are, in fact, several across Japanese folklore. Although, this one is noticeably similar to that of Teke Teke for several reasons. Firstly, she is an onryo that haunts the train stations of Japan. Secondly, she has no legs after they have been cut off on the tracks. And thirdly, and most curiously, she often also holds a sickle or a scythe, just like this chapter's legend, suggesting that Teke Teke is in fact an expansion or an adaptation of the spirit. Some seemingly either purposely or unwittingly merge the two together, creating one spirit out of the two tales. In fact, many of Kashima's origin stories are incredibly similar to that of Teke Teke, so similar that it is highly improbable that these two tales are entirely separate. Which one of the legend is the original is hard to say, as many of their tellings have been through word of mouth. Some see Teke Teke as an expansion of the Kashima Reiko ghost story. Others see Kashima Reiko as a bathroom-centric variation of Teke Teke. In many ways, they are twins, two deadly spirits out for revenge against those who deserve it. The morality of humanity is always in question. In many ways, it is a constant questioning of this that shows how moral we truly are. An inherently immoral species would not even care enough to question it, let alone as often as we do. Teke Teke and the onryo like her are somewhat metaphorical for a sad and hard fact of life. And that is that sometimes bad things are going to happen to you through no fault of your own. Sometimes you will get the brunt of someone's bad day caused by someone completely separate from your life. Occasionally, bad things you do not deserve will come your way, and there is nothing you can do to stop it. All we can do is put in place preventative action. If somebody had stepped in to help the young girl being bullied, to prevent the office worker of her assault, to talk down the schoolgirl from the platform edge, or to help the dying woman on the tracks, then perhaps the spirit would have gone peacefully. There would be no need for vengeance, and her soul may have been comforted by one last act of kindness. You see, the woman that was once alive was not evil. She had become the evil entity only after being let down by the society she lived in. Just as Jean-Jacques Rousseau suggested, that evil is not a birthright. It is a reaction to the society that we let thrive.
Urban Legends is researched, written, and produced by Luke Mordew. Original score by Billy Jupp, with additional sounds from storyblocks.com. If you like what you've heard and want to hear more, make sure to click subscribe on your chosen podcast provider and delve into the mysteries of our previous and future chapters. If you have more information or even a correction on something mentioned in this chapter, please contact us using the link in our show notes. We aim to ensure that all information provided is accurate and up to date, and this remains a top priority. To find out more about the work that we do, to leave a tip, or to get in touch about anything else, visit lrmordew.com/podcast. Follow us on TikTok by searching UL Podcast, on Instagram at urbanlegends.podcast, or join the Facebook group by simply searching Urban Legends Podcast.